Okay, you ready to try a song or two? How about this one? On Christ the solid rock I stand, all other ground he is. Hold it. How's that working? Oh, I did. Okay, try it again. My hope is built on nothing less than Jesus' blood and righteousness. I dare not trust the sweetest frame, but wholly lean on Jesus' name. On Christ the solid rock I stand, all other ground is sinking sand, all other ground is sinking sand. Is that too low? It's perfect for me. When he shall come with trumpet sound, oh, may I then in him be found, clad in his righteousness alone, faultless to stand before the throne. On Christ the solid rock I stand, all other ground is sinking sand, all other ground is sinking sand. Let's see if you know this one. Living below in this soul sinful world, hardly a comfort can afford. Striving alone to meet temptation sore, where could I go but to the Lord? Where could I go? Oh, where could I go? Seeking a refuge for my soul, needing a friend to help me in the end, where could I go but to the Lord? Neighbors are kind, I love them every one, we get along in sweet accord. But when my soul needs manna from above, where could I go but to the Lord? Where could I go? Oh, where could I go? Seeking a refuge for my soul, needing a friend to help me in the end. Where could I go but to the Lord? Life here is grand with friends I love so dear. Comfort I get from God's own word. Yet when I face the chilling hand of death, where could I go but to the Lord? Where could I go? Oh, where could I go? Seeking a refuge for my soul, needing a friend to help me in the end. Where could I go but to the Lord? Last chorus again. Where could I go but to the Lord? True, huh? Okay, here's our text that we're basing our seminar on. Let the renewing of your mind transform you. Here's another version. Be changed on the inside by letting your mind be made new again. So I'm not going to go over a lot of review from yesterday, but as we go through this, we're going to be talking quite a bit about what we talked about yesterday. So you're going to get a review anyway, and it'll be a part of what we're talking about. Okay, we're going to talk today about the formative years. We want to look at what happens in a child from ages 0 to 9 in terms of the formation of a number of areas, self-image, spiritual values, character, a lot of the fundamentals that take place in young children. All right, I'm going to give you a little brief lesson here called hardwired versus livewired. So hardwired. Animals are all hardwired in the brain. What that means is that the animals are specifically geared to whatever the situation they are. If you've got a baby robin, that baby robin is designed in its mind already to live the life of a robin. This is a great mystery to scientists. What would happen if you took a robin and you said, we're going to change you with a puffin. So what we're going to do is we're going to put you in a cave in the side of the hill in the Arctic. And what we want you to do is to go fish and then raise your children here and then migrate to Antarctica or wherever you go, right? And we took the puffin and we brought it down here. We said, okay, we're going to put you here in a tree in a little nest. And then we want you to go find worms in the lawn. What would happen? Right. Every animal on earth is hardwired to be in the environment that they are in, and you can't change them. You cannot take a giraffe from Africa and change it with a muskox. It will not work. Their brain is absolutely hardwired for the environment that they're in. Okay. Pardon? Ah, now we come to Livewired. Livewired. Livewired is unique among the human population. Livewired means that a child is born with a blank slate in their mind. And that child can be adapted to any part of the earth, under any culture, under any circumstances. You can take a child and you can put him in the highlands of Mongolia and he will thrive and survive and learn to live there. And the generations would continue there. You can take a child and put him in Japan. You can put him in Panama. You can put him any place in the world and that child will adapt to whatever the circumstances. They will learn the language. Somebody was telling me yesterday, they were from Quebec, and they took their young son to Quebec, and the young son learned to speak French and completely forgot his English. And so when they brought him out of Quebec, then he had to adapt back to learning his English again, because the mind of a child is completely open and adaptable. And this is a complete mystery to scientists. How can it be that every creature in this world is hardwired in their brain except for a human being, which is live-wired? Completely different scenario. God designed it that way. Now, here's the secret in a child. Let me tell you about hardwired. I used to watch the caribou up in the Arctic in Alaska. A caribou calf can be dropped, and within 15 minutes, that caribou calf can run up to 40 miles an hour. Now, how is that possible? That's their means of survival, right? That's what you call being hardwired. They are absolutely adaptable to that situation and nothing else. But a child is not that way. And here's the secret. A child has about 5 times the number of brain cells that an adult has, but they are all unconnected. I just got to make an adjustment here. I'm trying a different system today. Let me see if I can do it this way. Hold on. Stay with me. Don't go to sleep. There we go. Okay. Okay. The brain of a baby has about 100 billion neurons in their brain. Now, you understand how the neuron works and how synapses work. You remember back anatomy and physiology that you went through and learned how the brain works. It's simple that the brain operates on tiny electrical impulses, and those impulses go across little sections. Wanda, you should be the one that's explaining this, not me. She's the expert. There's little neurons, 100 billion neurons in the brain. And the electrical signals go across what's called the synapse. They jump across this little area called the synapse, and they feed information on to other neurons. Now, there's about 100 billion neurons in a baby's brain, but each neuron has about 2,500 of those synapses. Okay? Now, each synapse has about 10,000 branches. And so it's possible in the mind of a child to make a quadrillion connections. But in the mind of the child, there are no connections. The average neuron, by the way, is between 4 and 100 billionth of a meter in length. Just to give you an idea of what we're talking about here. Okay. So scientists say that a baby's mind is remarkably unfinished. And that's what they call a great mystery. So why is the human brain designed differently to be able to adapt to its own environment? Like I said, you could put a baby in the Arctic, you could put them in the jungles of Peru, it didn't matter where, you could put a baby there and they would adapt to that environment and they would thrive in that environment. One of the greatest studies is called the study of epigenetics, and it's a whole study, fascinating study, on how you store information, and then how that information is retrieved, and how it goes through the genetics and feeds to the next generation, step by step. It's a fascinating one. The baby's brain has the capacity to store what is now stored in cumulatively in all of the computers in the world. Approximately 1 zettabyte of information. Now that's way beyond anything that we can possibly think of. By the way, I said yesterday, a baby elephant has 257 billion neurons in its brain, but its brain is hardwired, not live-wired. That's different, completely different. Okay, so how does this process of growth take place? The first thing that when you watch a baby figure things out, right? How long does it take them to figure out what a bottle is? Right? It doesn't take them long. Can you imagine the explosion of synapses that's taking place in that brain in the first few months of this baby as they're trying to assimilate all this information and put it together and make sense of it in their world? But that's what they're doing. You see, the brain is forming paths, understanding language, all of these things. It's a process of growth. The first word that a baby speaks. My grandson, first word that he spoke was Papa. Now, Papa. Now, if you could ever warm an old man's heart. I have no idea whether he even knows what it means, but that's the first word.
Is that your version of it?
That's my version. It doesn't matter what it sounded like, it was Papa to me. That's right. Here's another thing that's interesting. When a baby learns his first 50 words, once he gets a vocabulary of 50 words, then he explodes from that point on. And he learns to put them in sentences and to talk, and his vocabulary just explodes after 50 words. I just found that out the other day. He's what? He doesn't talk yet. Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Have any of you ever seen, there's a show on Sunday night with this guy that takes all these children and, they're kind of children with exceptional talents. What's the name of it? Little Big Shots. Said it. It's Little Big Shot. Now, he takes all these kids that are about 3 years old, 4 years old, probably up to 9 or 10 years old. You ever watch that show? I've watched it a couple times with my wife. It's fascinating what those little children, you'll see a child 3 years old that'll sit down and play Beethoven in an unbelievable fashion. They had one time on there a girl that was, she was probably, I'm guessing, about 9 years old, 8 to 9 years old. And he put together a square of 12 all different numbers on them. And he said, they were just random numbers. And he said, memorize those numbers. You've got 10 seconds. So she memorized the numbers. And then he started asking her to add. He would say, add box number 3 and box number 8 and box number 9. And, of course, she couldn't see it then. And she would add them, and she was correct every single time. He would say, multiply box 4 and box 8 and box 12. And she'd do it. And she was right every time. 9 years old. So then he said, he took cards, playing cards, and he mixed them all. Anybody ever see this? He mixed them all up randomly, and then he gave her the stack of cards. And he said, you've got 10 seconds to memorize those cards. So she took the whole stack of cards, and she went through them one after like that. And it took her about probably 6 seconds, and she handed them back to him. And he said, are you done? And she said, I'm done. He said, okay. So then he took those cards, and he had about 6 kids up there. And he started handing them out cards, all to the 6 of them. And then he would say, okay, what is the 4th card that I gave to kid number 3? And she'd say, an ace of hearts. And he was right. He'd say, well, what's the 6th card I gave to number 4? And she would give it, and she was right every time. And this guy, Harvey, what's his name? Steve Harvey, he throws his hands up and he says, I've got a winner. You and I are going to Las Vegas. But anyway, what went on in the mind of an 8 to 9 year old girl that had that capability of memorizing in her mind? Now, here's the amazing thing about the human mind. The human mind has the capacity and the capability that stretches far beyond what any human being can possibly conceive that they are capable of doing. We just don't train them that way. By the time you're an adult, remember I said yesterday, by the time you're adult, your brain has gone from about 100 billion neurons to about 23 billion in males and about 18 to 19 billion in females. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that males are smarter than females. What it means is that males usually have a broader sphere that they work in, and I think that's changing rapidly, but usually they work in a far broader area than women do. But what happened to the rest of them? That's it. You don't use it, you lose it. So as the baby is forming these neurons, he's forming little paths in his brain. And those paths in his brain become solidified. The more often those paths are formed, the more they're repeated, the more solid they become. The less the paths are used, then they atrophy away until they're gone. And so that's the process on which a baby is learned. In other words, the baby is sculpted by the world that he lives in. Now, we're going to talk about the implications of this in a minute, but just stop and think. This is called imprinting. The child imprints in their mind the world around them. Okay. I just wanted to note this. I grew up in New Brunswick, which is about, when I grew up, about 50% French. And so half my classmates spoke French, and it was mandatory. We all had to take French all the way through grade 12. So I took French all the way through grade 12. Took 2 years of it in college, and then promptly forgot it. I can't speak a word of French. I know that poulet is chicken, and that's about it. I don't know what anymore. What happened to it? I didn't use it, and it atrophied away, and now it's gone. But a person who learns a different language actually expands their brain. They say to learn one language is extremely difficult. To learn another language after you learned one is much, much easier. Once you've learned two other languages, you can learn five languages or seven languages and nine languages like that. It becomes very easy because your brain becomes attuned to it. Tomorrow we're going to talk a little bit about teenagers, and you're going to find that very interesting in terms of... Now, I don't know whether this is going to work or not, but we're going to try it. I got a little embedded video here that I'm hoping it'll show and work. Because I want to show you. No. Shucks. It was a cute little video about terrible twos. Pardon? Okay, so now we're going to review a little bit about what we talked about yesterday. We're going to start with the unconscious mind. So here's an illustration. You're talking away with somebody and you're in a big discussion and there's words spilling out of your mouth more quickly than you can consciously control. And you say to yourself, I didn't know I knew that. Man, I'm smart. Well, number one, don't take too much credit. Because what's going on behind the scenes is your autonomic system, your unconscious mind, is processing information and processing the conversation and formulating your thoughts in your mind as you speak. And as it formulates them and you warm up to the subject, you will find that what feeds into that is all of the information that's in the subconscious mind. And we're going to get to that in a minute. But don't take credit for all that you say by saying, oh, I just thought of something. You didn't just think of it. Your unconscious mind has been processing that and working on it. Now, here's what's interesting to me. Have you ever been in an accident? Have you ever noticed that when you're in an accident, it's like all of a sudden time slows to slow motion? And it feels like this eternity is stretching by as these events take place. Why is that? Because your unconscious mind is taking over and it's analyzing the situation and it's analyzing how it has to react to that situation. It's not that the events have slowed down, but your unconscious mind takes control. And it's making decisions that you have no knowledge about in terms of how your body or how you are going to react to whatever that situation is. But it feels like time is going slow. Now, here's an interesting thing. They train hockey players to the place where hockey is completely done in the unconscious mind. They want every reaction, everything that happens on the ice, to be so imprinted in the brain that their unconscious mind takes over and plays the game for them. And the person that's playing the game may be playing an outstanding game, but he can be thinking about what happened last night, you know, at home, or he can be thinking about something totally different. But his body is carrying out what the unconscious mind has been imprinted in. And when the coaches reach that point, they know they've got a hockey player on their hands. Because everything that happens is going to be run by the unconscious mind and it's going to be reacted to by the body itself. That's how important the unconscious mind is. In the Army, the reason that they have all of that training in the Army is for imprinting. What they want is for that person, when they're in any given situation, they want them to react without taking time to stop and think through and rationalize and decide if this is the right thing to do. There's no time to do that. And so they train the unconscious mind to do exactly what they're trained to do. It's called imprinting. Now I'm going to show you why that is so crucial. My son teaches at Walla Walla. And one of the things he teaches is speech. And he makes his students get up and do an impromptu speech. And I've talked to several of his students that had to do this. He'll go, you, any subject you want, you've got 7 minutes. Instantaneously, I was talking to a young fellow here just a few weeks ago that is a friend of mine that was in his class. And I said, so what happened? He said, everything froze. He said, I couldn't move. He said, I tried everything I could to get up and speak. And he said, I could not make my body get out of the chair. The unconscious mind immediately took over because of the stress that was related with the thought of him standing up and everybody in front of everybody and giving a speech. Well, he finally did. He stood up and he picked a subject that he knew well, and he spoke. I remember my wife telling me that when she was at CUC, her speech teacher did that to her. And she got up and she said one line. And then she said it again. And she said it about 10 times. And finally, the speech teacher said, okay, Colleen, you can sit down and we'll find somebody else. She couldn't get beyond the one line that she gave. That's all a subject of the unconscious mind. Remember the story of Jacob wrestling with the angel? Now, what do you think happened in that situation? Remember, Jacob was on his way home, right? What was his one big fear? Esau, he was under the impression that Esau was going to kill him, right? So the minute that angel touched him, he immediately went into the mode of survival, right? And he began to wrestle for his life. I don't know what was processing in his conscious mind or his subconscious mind, but I sure know what his unconscious mind was doing. It was survival for him. And all night long, he wrestled with that angel until finally he recognized who it was. And that changed the whole scenario. It changed everything. Okay, we got to get on to what we're talking about here. The subconscious mind. Okay, the subconscious mind, remember we said yesterday, while the unconscious mind is fully functional at birth, the subconscious mind is a blank piece of paper. Every single act, every conversation, everything you have ever read, everything you've ever watched on television, anything that has ever happened to you in your life is indelibly recorded in your subconscious mind. And it's there. You may not have the ability of recall, but that doesn't mean it's not there. Some of us have a little more giftedness at recall than others, but you can have scenarios. When people get Alzheimer's, isn't it interesting that they can't tell you what they had for lunch, but they can tell you exactly what they did when they were 10 years old? Where does that come from? It's all stored in the subconscious mind. It's there, everything. Remember, I mentioned to you yesterday, and this is where we're giving a little bit of review. I mentioned to you yesterday that they've done probes on the human mind, and they found that they can actually, by probing certain parts of the brain, they can have that person relive some event that took place in their life in living color, because it's all there. So the subconscious mind stores all of your life experiences, your memories, your skills, all the situations you've been through, all the images you have ever seen. It's stored in there. That's what allows you to drive. What you do in your drive, the reason that you can drive and text and look in the mirror and put on your makeup all at the same time, preserve me, but the reason that you can drive and do other things is because you've imprinted the ability to drive into your subconscious mind to the level where your unconscious mind takes the feedback instantaneously from the subconscious mind and applies it, and you do it that way. So the subconscious mind is responsible for automatically triggering events and emotions that you suddenly experience upon any type of a new situation. Your subconscious mind is where you compile your own personal mores, your standards, your customs, your traditions. That's what gives you a worldview. Your subconscious mind is the seat of your self-image, and we're going to spend a little bit of time on that tomorrow. talking about the self-image, especially when it comes to teenagers. And we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about teenagers tomorrow, and a little bit about self-image. Your worldview is not your belief in politics. It's not your belief in religion. Your worldview is the glasses through which you see the world. And everybody is unique. Everybody sees the world in a little different way. And it's based on everything that's happened in your life. Subconscious mind is a powerful force. Okay, now I want to talk a little bit about imprinting, because the imprinting process that takes place in the subconscious mind is pivotal to raising children. Why is it that you take on a lot of the customs of your parents? You do things the way they did. Sometimes you cook the way they did, even down to how they set the table. It's uncanny how those things are passed on to you. Why is that? Because of imprinting. Now, media has picked up on this. Why is it, ladies, when you walk into a grocery store, the first thing that they have right there is flowers? So what goes through your mind the minute that you see flowers?
My husband should be sending me
flowers. Exactly. That's right. That's exactly what it is. When's the last time my husband sent me flowers? You know? Well, maybe it's time. I'm just going to get these for him, and he can give them to me, right, when we get home. So the first thing that's there, flowers. As you go through the grocery store, it is set up. All of the end caps, everything in the grocery store is set up specifically for imprinting in your brain. Right down to when you come to the final counter. When you come to the counter, what's at eye level for kids? Right. What's at eye level for adults? Yeah. What is it? Esquire or Inquire or all those magazines. Why is that? They are imprinting your subconscious mind so that you will respond to what they want you to buy and what you want you to do. And don't you ever think that this is not researched. Here's something interesting for you ladies. Most of the urinals in Europe have a little fly painted on them.
Fly.
A fly. It's painted on the urinal right in the center.
What color?
What color?
Yeah.
You want to know what color the fly is?
Black.
I have no idea. It's just a fly. Why would it be there in the center of the urinal?
They aim for it.
Aim. That's right. Aim. Right. Imprinting in the mind, aim. Now, our son, every time he had to go to the bathroom, we would throw a Cheerio in there. And we would say, there's a ship, you sink it. And it's amazing what he did. I wish I could do that with my grandson. When my grandson goes to the bathroom, you don't want to be any place within 10 feet. So that's a little free tip for you mothers, you know. Here's the product of imprinting. My son loves football. My son-in-law loves football. He lives in Lacombe. He's a dentist. And now my grandson, here, what was it, a couple years ago that the Seahawks lost in the last 15 minutes, whatever it was. My grandson, who was like 4 years old or 5 years old, cried for 20 minutes when they lost. Now, what had gone on in imprinting in his brain that he could be so upset when his dad's favorite team lost? You see, what I want you to understand is how things are passed from parents to child. In terms of everything, you know, this idea of imprinting is... Your argument doesn't necessarily have to be logical, but if you repeat it over and over and over again, after a while, people will begin to believe it. You know, that's what Nazi Germany did. They took one message And they repeated that message day after day after day. Then they got all the university kids involved in repeating that same message, the superiority of a race, until everybody was so imprinted they were convinced. The logic of it made no sense to anybody, but it was still imprinted in their mind. Now here's the question. What's getting imprinted in your teenager's mind? Day after day. 20 years ago, there was a sitcom. I don't know, maybe 15 years ago. There was a sitcom. And it was about this housemaid. And she worked for some rich guy. And she talked in this real whiny voice. What was that called? Anybody remember?
The Nanny.
The Nanny. Yeah, I think that was it. And she talked in this whiny voice, and everybody laughed at the way she talked. Do you know that over the years, if you listen to most teenagers now, they speak in the same voice that she spoke in back there? Imprinting. Little do we understand the power of the media in shaping our subconscious mind. Our subconscious mind is programmed by repetition, not by logic and analysis. It's only the conscious mind that weighs and looks at logic and weighs information presented by the subconscious mind. The subconscious mind takes everything at face value. I'm going to talk a little bit tomorrow about the power of television and how television bypasses your conscious mind and deals directly with your subconscious mind. Both television and movies and video games deal directly with your subconscious mind and bypass your conscious mind for this reason. And it's called vicarious experience. Well, that's tomorrow. We'll talk about that tomorrow. Okay. But as a child, you learn your philosophy of life from those formative years of early childhood. You formulate your own ideas, which results in the fruit of what we call character. And tomorrow we're going to spend some time on character. If you repeat enough, people will come to accept it. Did you ever think of that, about that in terms of homosexuality? Yeah. You never hear the conversation about whether it's morally right or wrong, or whether it's biblically right or wrong. That conversation never comes up. The conversation that comes up is, can you accept me who I am? And so what that does is that it imprints into the human mind to the place where you reach the place where you are willing to accept people's moral values, whether you agree with them or not, no matter how far removed they are from you. And now the government is in on this, you know, and they give the same message, and that message becomes overwhelming to the general population. Okay. As I said, your worldview is shaped by input that you received as your child. Now listen to the statement. Your children don't grow up to be what you want them to be. They grow up to be what you are. That was my grandmother's statement. Your children don't grow up to be what you want them to be. They grow up to be what you are. What that means is the parental priorities become children's priorities in adulthood. Parental's preferences become children's preferences in adulthood. Parental values become children's values in adulthood. Parental spirituality becomes children's spirituality in adulthood. One of the great blessings in my life was the home that I was raised in. This was, in my mind, an exceptional situation because I watched my father love my mother. I listened to my father's stories. My father and mother read to us. I bet you we went through the Bible stories at least 12 times. They instilled in us two things, a deep love for the Bible and a deep love for nature. And those things imprinted into my mind, that with the fact that both my grandfather and my father left a legacy in spiritual values that was formative for me in my life. You see, a child's character is formed by his parents. What a responsibility that is. Now, why did God do that? I understand that God gave mankind the ability to procreate in his own image. That's about as close to creation as you can possibly get. And that must stick in the devil's craw. But he can't create anything. But God gave us the ability to recreate ourselves. And not only that, he gave us the opportunity and the freedom to recreate ourselves. And so the greatest challenge for us as parents is the fact that our child's character is going to be formed. Now, we're going to talk tomorrow about those teenage years and how everything that you have ever given them is going to be reevaluated and analyzed and dissected so that they come up with their own state of values. So you can't say that this is absolutely true in every parent's house, every parent's lineage with their children, because when children reach a certain age, they have the capability and the freedom to decide for themselves and to make their own choices and form their own values. But here's an interesting thing to me. In the late 1970s, there was a ruler in Romania by the name of Nicolae Ceaușescu. Remember him?
Yes.
He decided that he was going to build Romania on the backs of labor. And so every parent who had less than five children was fined. So children proliferated in Romania during that time. The problem was the economy was so terrible, the parents couldn't afford their children, and so they began to abandon them by the thousands. And so the government took over and built these huge orphanages, great big cement buildings with hundreds of rooms in them, and they put all the children in there. Almost 200,000 babies were housed in these big cement buildings. Each area, two rooms, three rooms, had a single light bulb that was on 24 hours a day. The babies learned not to cry just because there was no response to their crying. They were never touched. They were never held. Even when they were fed, they were never held. They measured their brains and they found that the neurons had been dying by the millions every day because of no affection, no cognitive stimulation, no imprinting into the subconscious mind. And plus, as they grew, they were left with no parameters. They didn't understand most of the basics about any type of social values. They had no ability for affection, and they didn't even understand affection. Their subconscious mind had no input to evaluate. And you remember when the big push came on, and we're going to come back and explain a little bit about the implications of that a little later this week. But I want you to think of the difference between them and a child who was raised in a loving home, surrounded by people who affirm them and encourage them and give them boundaries and guidelines and things like that. And we're going to come back to the implications of that. But the devil has a master plan. And here it is in a nutshell. Number one, to destroy the fabric of the family. 50% of the children born in the United States and Canada find themselves in a one-parent home before the age of 18. One in three are born to a single mom. The largest single population group in the United States is single mothers. Now, here's an interesting thing about Canada. There's an unprecedented growth in Canada of single fathers. They're growing at 2.5 times the rate of single mothers. And scientists, researchers can't explain it. They don't understand it. What's going on in Canada? But the devil's goal is to take control of a child's mind by the age of 7. The average child watches 25 hours of TV and internet a week outside of school. By the time they're a teenager, by the time they're age 13, they're up to 48 hours a week of TV and internet, including, you know, videos and everything like that. 48 hours a week, not including school. When we talk about reprogramming the mind, you think the devil doesn't have a master plan? I want to talk a little bit about this. Developing a mindset of uncontrolled materialism. The millennials are completely focused not on material accumulation. Many of them are fairly Spartan in terms of material accumulation. What they're completely focused on is buying experiences for their children. They will spend any amount of the money to buy experiences. They're trying to buy experiences as a means of success. That's why places like Disney World are so popular. I was in April, I guess it was. I was in northern China, and I was in a city called Dalian, which is a city way out on the ocean there. Not a big city in Chinese terms, probably 5-6 million people. And the folks that were there took me down to an area along the shore, and there was a complete reproduction of Disney World. Everything was exact. You'd swear as you walked in right down to Mickey Mouse and Minnie Mouse, the whole thing, Disney World in China. So if he can destroy the fabric of the family, if he can take control of the minds of children and youth, and if he can develop a mindset of uncontrolled materialism, then in my mind, the devil has accomplished exactly what he wants. Listen to this statement. The great deceiver hopes to so confuse the minds of men and women that none but his voice will be heard. Now, here's the interesting thing. Your worldview is the framework in which you view reality, and it makes sense to you, and it is, to you, it is reality. Whether it's true or not, it includes your ideology, your philosophy, your theology. It includes all different types of areas in your life about how you view life through the glasses that you view life. I met a lady the other day that was, I'm guessing, rough guess, probably in her late 50s. She didn't like men. Her whole worldview was shaped by what happened when she was a child. And every glass, everything that she looked at, every lens that she looked at in the world was shaped by what happened to her when she was young. How did that change her worldview? Right? So every one of us have a worldview that has been shaped by things that happened when we're young. Whether it's conscious or it's unconscious, every person has a personal worldview. And it's to you, it's true. The key difference between adults of children like the children who were raised in Romania and children who were raised in the Christian home is their worldview, which shapes to their character. Now, I just threw this in there. How are we doing for time? Oh, my. I'm not going to go into this. But it's interesting to look at what shaped Canada's worldview. I've been gone for almost 20 years. And coming back to Canada now, it's a shocker to see how the worldview of Canada has changed in 20 years. Do you notice it? No, you probably don't. You don't see it at all, right? Right. My point in that is that the worldview of a nation changes completely every generation. because it's the sum total of the worldview of everybody that's in it. Okay, we're going to, I want to just spend a little bit of time here on this question. A Christian's worldview. Look at these nine things. This is what George Barna, who does research in with Christians, he has nine areas that him represent a Christian's worldview. Do absolute moral truths exist? Is absolute truth defined by the Bible? Did Jesus Christ live a sinless life? Is God the all-powerful and all-knowing creator of the universe, and does he rule it today? Is salvation a gift from God that cannot be earned? Is Satan real? Does a Christian have a responsibility to share his or her faith in Christ with other people? And is the Bible accurate in all its teachings? What do you think? What percentage of Christians do you think would agree with that? Would you say that the worldview of Christians in terms of the biblical basis is changing? So 91% of Christians could not agree with those fundamentals in terms of what it means to be a Christian, because their worldview of a Christian has changed so dramatically. Do you think the devil is not trying his best to change the whole idea of what it means to be a Christian? Now, the reason that I want to focus on this so much is because of this. Your role as a parent or a grandparent is to prepare a child to win in a moral war, an all-out war for the souls of our children and our grandchildren. And I don't care whether you're talking about a school setting or a public setting or whatever they may encounter. And your key task is to try to transmit to that child what a growing, vibrant relationship with Jesus Christ looks like. And most of us are of the opinion that, well, you know, maybe they could get it in Sabbath school. Or if we send them to a Christian church, you know, they'll probably assimilate that there. And so most of us don't have a plan. I would suggest that it's not the role of the church or the role of school. It's the role of the parent and the grandparent, who are the primary shaper of a child's worldview in adulthood. Now, like I said earlier, there's no guarantees. Adults make their own decisions, and they form their own worldview. But I can tell you this, that the basic attributes of character and spiritual values, they're shaped by the age of nine. Now, here's a crucial question. What core values do you want to instill in your child or your grandchild? Now, I've got a handout here someplace. Here it is, back here on the bench. This is just a little bit of a guideline to help you do an analysis of, it's kind of a worksheet to help you develop, to identify what the core spiritual and moral values are that you would want to pass on to the next generation. And it's a worksheet. So what I'd like you to do, and it's all, I've got it all written out here. What I'd like you to do is to take this worksheet. Maybe we can just have some help handing these things out here. I don't know whether I've got enough or not, but here's one more. And Diane can have my own. So what this will do is it will guide you through step by step, developing your own list of core values, moral and spiritual values that you feel that would be essential for the next generation to know and understand. And on the back, I gave you just some sample values that you can look at. But I would suggest that you take this and just use it for discussion purposes so that you can formulate a plan. We're going to spend a little bit of time in the next 2 days talking about the conscious mind. We haven't really delved into the conscious mind in terms of the captain of the ship, and we're going to spend some time on that. But tomorrow, we want to talk specifically about character and spiritual values formation and where it comes from. And what we're going to do is we're going to look at starting from puberty. What happens starting from puberty, and where are those developed in the mind? Okay, that's all I got for today.
Thank you.
You're welcome.